Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big-time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd on the Double with the Double S Express.
Welcome, everybody, to On the Double with the Double S Express. Hard to imagine, it's show number 18 already. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. What is going on? Week number one in the NFL is almost done.
Man, and so good afternoon and good evening, everybody. Man, it has been an exciting week one of the NFL season. Of course, you know, everybody with great anticipation for their teams in this first week. I know half of us are excited and another half aren't. But, man, I am so glad that the NFL has started, Sean Wally.
Football all around, from the high school level to great college action, and, of course, the professional level, the National Football League taking center stage, starting on Thursday night with the unbelievable performance in Denver.
Man, Peyton Manning in Denver. I mean, the performance that he put on was nothing less of sensational. As far as his play, 7 touchdowns in that game. I mean, those are basically, you know, Madden 2014 numbers, Sean Wally. I mean, this guy couldn't miss, doing awesome things for the Broncos.
Oh, yeah, it was a competitive game for a while, actually until the third quarter. And then all of a sudden, if you turned away, you changed channels, you went and cooked some dinner, next thing you know, the game's not even close.
Yeah, and with that addition of Wes Welker, you know, things are definitely looking up for the Denver Broncos. The other thing is the defense is basically standing pat. It looked like, you know, without having Elvis Dumervil in and Von Miller, that the Denver Broncos were going to have a little bit of trouble. But, man, when you have a gunslinger like Peyton Manning and you have a strong receiving core that the Denver Broncos have, I mean, these guys are looking like the team to beat.
Well, it took, you know, one half of football. It was anybody's game. So it's a combination of some things went right for the Broncos and some things obviously didn't go right for the world champion Ravens to start the 2013 campaign.
And, yeah, you mentioned a very strong point. It is the Super Bowl champion Baltimore Ravens, and they have a lot of pride. And so, you know, when you have, you know, the Baltimore Ravens coming out, and it was a back and forth game for a little bit. But then again, you know, when Denver, you know, came out in the second half, and it didn't take much. The next thing you know, like you said, you go to the bathroom, you come back, and next thing you know, the Broncos are up 14 points.
And let's not leave out the emergence of tight end Julius Thomas of the Denver Broncos. 2 touchdowns, just a great game. And, you know, he's a guy that we talked about previously, and he's been injured in his first couple years in the league, and now he's healthy, a former basketball player, and he just definitely had a great night receiving passes from Peyton Manning.
Well, yeah, he definitely had a strong fan base in Northern California. Of course, Thomas is from Tokay High School in Stockton out here in Northern California. And so, you know, the thing was, he didn't even play organized football or high school football. And he goes to Portland State on a basketball scholarship, plays 3 years there, and then decides to turn out for football. And, you know, here he is, this sensational tight end. And so, you know, yeah, the Denver Broncos are definitely rolling 7s at the beginning of the year.
And that was only one game. What a great game it was. And we had a lot of good games over the weekend, over yesterday, I should say, Sunday, the first Sunday of NFL action in week one. And where to begin? Lots of intrigue, a couple of upsets, and not as much offense as everybody expected.
Yeah, well, if you're the San Francisco 49ers, there was plenty of offense as they played the Green Bay Packers yesterday. And, you know, one of the things that I took away from that game yesterday was is that both teams are in midseason form. And what I mean by that is you have two solid defenses with in the San Francisco 49ers and the Green Bay Packers, and they played admirably yesterday. But what the fans got is they got an excellent show from one Aaron Rodgers, and then with Colin Kaepernick. Colin Kaepernick throwing for 412 yards in the first in his first game of the season. That is amazing, Sean Wally. And the key was is that the Green Bay Packers set their defense up to stop the run from Colin Kaepernick, because Colin lit them up last year in the playoffs running for 181 yards rushing, but Colin did everything from the air. He only had 7 yards of rushing from the scrimmage, 412 yards in the air. Man, this guy is a complete quarterback.
So what do you think of the magician move of pulling the rabbit out of the hat and keeping Kaepernick mostly in the pocket and throwing and not running as he did last year?
Well, you know, if you believe everything that you've been hearing in the media this past week, of course you had Clay Matthews putting out that, hey, we are going to hit Kaepernick and we're going to hit him often. And you saw that in the first half. And, you know, as Clay Matthews just levels Kaepernick as he's running out of bounds, 15-yard penalty assessed on that one. Actually, the penalty's offset because there was a penalty thrown against the 49ers as well. But you knew that the Green Bay Packers were going to come after Colin Kaepernick. And what John Harbaugh said was, is he said, hey, I'm just going to keep my quarterback in the pocket, and I believe in his arm as much as his legs, and it's a long season, and, you know, people think that Colin Kaepernick is just all run and, or, you know, a little bit of run, a little bit of pass, a little bit of everything. Colin proved that he could be a pocket quarterback.
And he definitely adds another dimension to all the different things he brings to the table, from his athleticism to his smarts, and now he's proving once again that he's got a gun.
Yeah, well, you know, Colin's deal is that he is a hard worker. In the off season, you know, of course they had, you know, the Sports Illustrated edition where he's, you know, posing, and then, you know, he wore the Miami Dolphins hat, and, you know, all these things were coming out, and you thought that Colin Kaepernick was not being focused and that this would be his sophomore slump year. But Colin is very driven to make himself better. He is the first person in the gym and the last person, or first person on the field and the last person to leave the field day in and day out. And he shows that. And, you know, I believe it just spreads to the team because, I mean, they came out and they took care of business against those Green Bay Packers.
In that great game in the afternoon yesterday, you're mentioning Green Bay and San Francisco, that I have to add, Sean Boyd was at Candlestick Park working for the television networks. Sean, what do you take away from referee Bill Levy and, one more time, his misinterpretation of a rule, his, dare I say, ineptness of calling the proper rule? I mean, San Francisco should have been given a fourth down. It's been talked about all since yesterday that after the, you know, Clay Matthews clotheslining Kaepernick going out of bounds, then the fight breaks out. And instead of it being fourth down, as it should have been per rule, referee gave them third down, to which the Niners scored a touchdown.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if, I believe it was third and one or maybe third and a yard and a half, almost third and two, you know, when they, you know, when Bill Levy gave them that spot and the ball back. But I'm not sure that Harbaugh wouldn't have gone for it on fourth down. He went for it in the fourth quarter, and, you know, I agree. I mean, that play was, you know, that was something that was blotched on Bill Levy's part or the officiating's part. But I don't think that it was something that really cost the Green Bay Packers. Again, I believe that Harbaugh probably would have gone for it, you know, gambled, to see, you know, if they could punch it into the end zone. Of course, the very next play to Aquan Bolden into the end zone for the score. So, I mean, you know, yeah, you know, maybe it could have changed things a little bit. It would have, you know, made the game a 3-point game instead of a 7-point game, but I don't think that it decided that game yesterday.
Well, that's only one game. There were many, many more to get to. Sean Boyd, where do you want to go next?
Man, you know, my biggest question is what went on with the Pittsburgh Steelers yesterday? Now, Tennessee, I mean, we know that they're a team that needs some work and is on the rise. But for Pittsburgh, I mean, this was a game that they were supposed to come out and take care of business. And it was a lackluster performance. I believe Ben Roethlisberger was sacked 5 times in the game. The offensive line showing signs of weakness. And then, of course, you know, losing Harrison. Of course, he's with the Bengals right now. You know, Pittsburgh is looking like a team of vulnerability. And, you know, I know that it's early, and again, it's week one. But, man, there has to be a grave concern in Pittsburgh.
Absolutely. You know, the terrible towels are finally helping the team be terrible. And it's, you know, you can't ever count Mike Tomlin out. He's a great coach. He was a good football player. He's a great motivator. But that offensive line is one of the worst in the NFL. And Ben can't do everything by himself. And at times he tries to. And more often than not, that does not work out. And, you know, Tennessee is definitely, as you said, a team on the rise. They've been close recently, and it's time that they're finally being led by Jake Locker, and he can go out there, lead that team, as he did at the University of Washington, to doing good things and getting better and progressing. They've got the weapons. They've got CJ2K. They've got Kenny Britt. They've got Nate Washington and a decent defense. Will they shock the world and win the division? Probably not. But can they be mediocre, and which is still better than last year? Most likely. And it's, you know what? You can't be on top all of the time. It's not possible, especially with salary caps and, you know, when players age, you don't replace them, you don't stay young. This is what happens, and that's what the Steelers have to go through.
Yeah, you know, and this is the parody part of the NFL when you're talking about the Tennessee Titans. And, you know, you have all of these preseason polls and these preseason power rankings. And, of course, you have teams like Tennessee down at the bottom along with Oakland. And then you have Cleveland, and, you know, you're thinking, man, these teams are just going to be the gutter of the NFL. And, you know, they come out in week one and they have a pulse and they have a little bit of heart. And, you know, talking about the Oakland Raiders, they had a game, Sean Wally, that was almost won yesterday.
Absolutely, they did. And we will get in depth to the Raider-Colts game in just a second. But right now, we're going to go out to the phone lines and welcome in Alex, who hopefully wants to talk some NFL.
What's up, guys?
Alex, how you doing, buddy?
All right, and you?
Good, good. Hey, welcome to the show, Alex. What's on your mind, man?
What was it?
Hey, welcome to the show.
Oh, one of your buddies had me call in.
Okay. All right. So what's your question?
I was just calling in, man, just to let everybody know the Cowboys are changing the game this year.
The Cowboys are changing the game.
With 12 turnovers?
Yep. But David, hey, all I got to say is first game, 3 interceptions in the first quarter. That should be a good sign right there.
That is. You know, they had a tough game yesterday playing in the division against the New York Giants. And, you know, to be honest with you, Alex, I didn't see this one coming. I thought that the Giants would come out and take care of business. So, you know, hats off to the Dallas Cowboys for that win last night.
Yeah, and any Raiders fans out there, they just need to know that as many Super Bowls that they won, it still doesn't make up because they haven't had any in a long time.
You're talking about the Raiders or the Cowboys?
No, and I'm just throwing that out there to the Raider fan.
You're saying as a Raider fan?
No, I'm saying it as someone that doesn't like the Raiders, that as gotcha. Many Super Bowls as they won, it doesn't make any difference because they haven't won in a long time.
Oh, okay. All right, I got you. I thought we were talking about the Dallas Cowboys, but yeah, I hear what you're saying. well, I can tell you this. I mean, you know, I know that the Dallas Cowboys have their five titles, and you know, every year the Dallas Cowboys are looked upon as being one of the better teams in the NFL. Let's just hope that Tony Romo can keep things going.
Hopefully he gets better after that injury of the game.
Yeah. So he had the bruised ribs, but I think that he'll be okay. So, but thanks for calling in, Alex.
You guys have a good one, man.
All right. You too.
Yeah. Alex has a decent point that the Raiders haven't won a championship in a while, but you know what? Neither have the Cowboys. That he is definitely a big fan of the Cowboys, and they haven't done anything in a long time themselves.
Wow. I don't know where that came from. He called in to talk about, hey, if you're going to talk about your team, and I appreciate you for calling in, Alex, if you're going to talk about your team, talk about your team. But, man, I mean, I don't know where that whole Oakland Raider deal came from. I believe because there's we do have a lot of Raider Nation fans out there, but, you know, that's to be expected, just like we have a lot of Cowboy fans out there. But, man, the last I checked, between the two teams, the Oakland Raiders were in the Super Bowl far recent than the Cowboys have been in the Super Bowl. So, you know, I don't know. That one was weird to me.
2002, if I'm not mistaken.
Man, 2002, and we all know what happened there. You know, John Gruden getting traded for, you know, draft picks in a box of peanuts. But, you know, that wound up stinging the Raider Nation there. But, you know, yeah, 2002, man, when the Cowboys were in the Super Bowl, when was that? Was that 94?
I don't even think the internet was invented by Al Gore at that time.
Yeah, but, thanks for calling in, Alex. And, I mean, we've got the phone lines open, you know, and we're talking football. And, man, we were just talking about the Raiders in the Indianapolis Colts and how how that game was. And, man, hey, Sean, how about another game? How about the Atlanta Falcons and the New Orleans Saints yesterday? That was a great ball game for week one.
Yeah, that was a typical Saints-Falcons game. High scoring, enough defense to put up a little bit of sacks, a pick or two, but not enough to stop the scoring. High-powered offenses dominate that series always. And you know what? It came down to you had to look at who was the home team. That was the Saints. And you had their head coach, Sean Payton, making his debut in more than a year as he was suspended for all of 2012.
Yeah, so in the offseason, you know, there were the teams that we were talking about who is going to go through the season and make it to the Super Bowl. And of course, we mentioned the San Francisco 49ers. We mentioned the Seattle Seahawks. And my pick, I picked the Atlanta Falcons to be in the Super Bowl, and I still stand by that out of the NFC. But the big question is, of course, you'd mentioned Sean Payton. How big of a difference is he going to make by being on the sidelines? And I say it's a huge difference. So you can't count out the Saints. You can't count out the Green Bay Packers. And, of course, I mean, you know, we're thinking the Washington Redskins, but by the way things look in this Monday night game between the Eagles and the Redskins, man, it looks like the Philadelphia Eagles have to be thrown in there for serious contention as well.
Yeah, there's never been a reason, a valid reason, to discount the Eagles. They basically ran their course under Andy Reid, and he had overused his welcome, and that path ran basically sour. And, you know, he moved on to a new place, and he's doing good things at Kansas City, and now new life, new energy, new blood has been brought to the Eagles organization, and you can see what it is doing as they're taken it out on the Washington Redskins.
Yeah, so, you know, the Philadelphia Eagles started out the game just, you know, like gangbusters. And, you know, they made a mistake early on. And D'Angelo Hall picked up a what was called a backwards lateral to where he picked it up. And Washington drew blood first. But the amount of plays that the Philadelphia Eagles ran in the first half and the amount of plays they ran in the first quarter, I believe it was something around 33 plays to Washington 6 in the first quarter. They had 11 first downs in the first quarter, did the Philadelphia Eagles, to the Washington Redskins 1 first down. And what they did is they just took the legs out of the Washington Redskins, but it looks like maybe the Philadelphia Eagles started out a little too fast for themselves. That this is an offense, a Chip Kelly offense that we've watched over and over and over again at the University of Oregon and Oregon Ducks. It's just a track meet. You don't know if they have on cleats or track shoes. This is the type of an offense that takes time to actually perfect. I do see the Philadelphia Eagles getting better at it, but right now in the game now, it looks like they're running out of gas here. As the game is tightened up just a little bit.
Yeah, it was basically it appears that with Chip Kelly's style, as he always did in Oregon, he brought that to the Philadelphia Eagles, and it seems like it is a sprint for them, and it needs to be a four-quarter marathon, and we'll see if they can hang on here at the end of this contest.
But here's one thing I do know, Sean Wally, and it's this, is that, you know, Chip Kelly was wondering if, you know, he should make the step and in going into the NFL and seeing if his genius could challenge or if defensive coordinators were up to the task of going against his offense. You know, right now, Chip Kelly is looking like, you know, the biggest guru that you could possibly imagine on the offensive side. Now, you know, there's always been a gimmick that's coming. There's been the Wildcat that was a few years back, and then you have the pistol offenses that are here, and they kind of come and go, and then you have the read option that's the big talk right now. But Chip Kelly's style of offense is an entirely different breed. It goes off of quick reads, hot reads. You know, if you've watched over on the sidelines, they have big signs showing and numbers and all kinds of gadgets that, you know, to offset and throw off. I wouldn't say throw off the defense, but it's to actually keep the ball moving. And, you know, I think that it's caught up with Michael Vick and them. But, you know, but again, as the season goes on, I can see them getting better and better. So it will remain to be seen if defenses can actually catch up to this offense.
That's the voice of Sean Boyd. I am Sean Wally. You're listening to On the Double with the Double S Express as we talk NFL action week one. And Sean Boyd talking about Chip Kelly and the apparent success his Eagles are having in week one, making that transition from the college game at Oregon to the NFL. What does it say for the success or lack thereof of college coaches trying to make that jump to the NFL? There have been a lot that have tried that have done well, and a lot that have tried that have done horribly. You look at the bright side for college coaches who have done well, you have to look at Jimmy Johnson, Barry Switzer, Pete Carroll is finally doing well in Seattle after a long college career. And now you've got Chip Kelly having some success, yet you've got the Steve Spurriers, the Nick Sabans, who fell flat on their face.
Yeah, you know, I think it's just, you know, who is willing to listen to your philosophy or your style of play at the next level? Are you geared to just coach college, or is your philosophy something that can go on to the professional level? I believe that Pete Carroll, in the beginning of his coaching career, when he had the stints with New England and with the New York Jets, I think he was, you know, a little too young to issue out what his philosophy was. But now, you know, after having a great success at USC and now getting to the next level, and I believe, you know, Pete Carroll surrounding himself with, you know, great people as well has helped him. Now, for Chip Kelly, I mean, Chip Kelly is revolutionizing something here with this offense. And now that he's going on to the NFL here, his offense still remains the same. When you look at the Oregon Ducks, nothing's changed. These guys are still running plays every 15 seconds. And you know, if they can't stop it at the college level and Chip Kelly's bringing it to the NFL level, you know, I believe that there's going to be that same amount of success, but it's only going to be a matter of time to figure, you know, for the NFL to say, hey, how can we stop this and what's the best way? We have the best players in the world. How can we put together and our defensive coordinators, how can those defensive minds come together and stop this? I just don't see it right now. It was a fun game to watch today.
The first of two games here on this Monday night, the first Monday night football action of the NFL season. They always do a doubleheader, one on the East Coast and one on the West, as the second game tonight is the Houston Texans at the San Diego Chargers.
Yeah, so yeah, the Houston Texans are one of the top teams in the AFC, and they're looking to start their season off right, just as the Denver Broncos did, because I believe the Houston Texans are one of the teams in the AFC that's going to be vying for that AFC championship. Of course, J.J. Watt has had a strong year last year and is looking to repeat that. You know, the big question mark is Arian Foster, who played very little, if at all, in the preseason. Is he going to come out? Of course, he's had little nicks and dings in the offseason. Will he come out and have a strong first game? And so, you know, Matt Schaub is Matt Schaub. I believe that if he manages the games properly, then the Houston Texans should have a real good game tonight. But as you saw with the, you know, with the Oakland Indy game, and you saw with the Pittsburgh or the Steelers and the Tennessee Titans, San Diego can come out, and Phillip Rivers is definitely game to come out and have a strong one. And so I believe there's some pieces that have been put in place for Phillip Rivers. They've added some receivers in the offseason and, you know, sharpening up their defense and keeping their defense strong. I think San Diego can give Houston a run tonight.
Phillip Rivers, that's a name I've always wondered why in the world back in the day the San Diego Chargers chose him over Drew Brees. Are you kidding me?
Well, you know, I ask the same thing. I mean, when they drafted Phillip Rivers, I thought, wow, what in the world? They already have a quarterback in Drew Brees. And, you know, to create that controversy, I thought sure that San Diego would stand pat with Drew Brees. But, you know, physicalities, I believe, came into play. I know that they say Drew Brees stands at around 5'11". Some say at maybe 5'10". You know, so size probably played a factor in keeping Phillip Rivers. And, of course, he has a strong arm. But, I mean, if you look at the successes of the two, I say Drew Brees definitely gets the upper hand on this one.
Yeah, big time. I mean, maybe Phillip had, I don't even know, was it a stronger arm? Did they like him because he was taller? I mean, really. I mean, Brees has been setting records and blowing records up left and right. And for some reason, San Diego moved on from him, and they've done pretty much not a lot since they given the reins to Phillip Rivers. I didn't understand it then. I don't understand it almost, 6, 8, 10 years later.
Yeah. And I think that maybe, you know, for San Diego fans and the front office, you know, they wanted to make it right as far as picking up a big physical quarterback, because they made such a huge mistake over 10 years ago with Ryan Leaf. And so, you know, maybe it was that. Maybe they said, well, gosh, this guy has the same physical attributes as Ryan Leaf. So who knows? I don't know why they took Rivers over Brees, but I mean, both guys are happy now, and their careers are a success. You know, it's just that San Diego, you know, they're one of those teams. We talked about the Dallas Cowboys. San Diego is another one of those teams that, you know, is supposed to be one of the tops, you know, in their conference year in and year out. And so now they're on the decline. And, you know, I was talking about power rankings earlier, and now you see San Diego down there in the low 20s as far as power rankings are concerned. So, you know, but, you know, when you have Phillip Rivers, you know, good things can happen.
That will definitely remain to be seen, and it starts tonight in San Diego as they host the Houston Texans, the supposedly vaunted Houston Texans. They've been close the last couple of years. The question is, can Matt Schaub lead them over the hump in the AFC?
Yeah, you know, and they have to make sure that they are staying healthy And, you know, that is the huge question mark for, you know, for the Houston Texans. You know, can they get these guys healthy? Of course, they added Ed Reed coming over from the Baltimore Ravens. And Ed is, and I understand, you know, Ed being long in the tooth in the NFL, maybe preseason isn't for him, kind of taking that Brett Favre route. And, you know, he said that if it was the beginning, he said this a few weeks ago, if it was the beginning of the season, that he probably wouldn't play. But if it was the Super Bowl, if the Super Bowl was in 3 weeks, yeah, he would definitely play, meaning if the Super Bowl was week one. And so, you know, you kind of wonder if Ed Reed is actually 100%, but he is a good addition if he can get on the field here soon.
That's the voice of Sean Boyd. I am Sean Wally. This is On the Double with the Double S Express, and we'll return after this with more insight and your phone calls at 888-429-5471 on the Double with the Double S Express.
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services, platinum service without the platinum price.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. Sean and Sean, that is why we are the Double S Express.
Yeah, so before we went to break, we were talking about, you know, week one in the NFL. And, of course, talking about the coaching styles and, you know, why people are successful, why some coaches are successful and some aren't. Of course, there was a, you know, college football in week two, actually, of college football. And, you know, having Chip Kelly going from, you know, from college to professional, there are some coaches that go from professional to college and they don't have as great of a success as well, Mr. Wally, and one that in particular, and that's down in Los Angeles. What is going on with the USC Trojans?
You know, we've got listeners here on the Double with the Double S Express that are wondering that same thing, is why does Lane Kiffin have a job? And if you look at his track record, aside from when he's been an assistant coach, what good has he done as a head coach?
Yeah, you know, and when you ask that question, of course, he got his start, you know, in Oakland, and we all know how that went. It was a travesty, and then going on to Tennessee to be the head coach for the Volunteers down in Knoxville. You know, there were high hopes for, you know, for the Knoxville or for the Tennessee Volunteers, and that didn't materialize. And now, you know, Lane Kiffin, at USC, where it all began for him, really as an assistant coach, you know, getting the chance to, you know, take over and, you know, and make things better for USC. And it just seemed like the USC job was a job that, man, it just seems like all you had to do is put somebody who could fog up a mirror and, you know, the team would be successful. But we're finding out that that's not the case, as Lane Kiffin is just tearing apart a great, great program down there in USC.
Well, let's give a little bit of credit to Mike Leach and the job he is doing at Washington State University, as the Cougars of Wazoo went down to USC and came away with a victory at the Los Angeles Coliseum. And that is proof for Mike Leach that he is moving the Cougars in the right direction. And that is also proof for the Trojans and Lane Kiffin that they have issues.
Yeah, you know, and again, hats off to Mike Leach, they at the helm with the Washington State Cougars. Of course, week one, be playing against the Auburn Tigers, going down to the Plains in Auburn, Alabama, playing the Auburn Tigers very tough as well. And, you know, again, that game that the Cougars played against the Trojans, there was some great defense that was going on with the Cougars. And, of course, the Cougars were moving the football up and down the field. Of course, the score didn't indicate that, but what I'm talking about, Sean Wally, is just the ineptitude that came about from watching USC. I mean, it seemed like there were more three and outs than I could ever imagine, or, you know, if from my recollection of USC football, I'd never seen so many three and outs by a USC Trojan football team.
Yeah, it was definitely not a great performance on either side of the ball by the Trojans. It's not what you were used to seeing from Trojan football. Even if you're not a great Trojan fan, you know their history. You know they've been great. You know they're in Los Angeles, and they've got all the glitz and the glamour, and Pete Carroll did great there for 10 years and won national championships, and John Robinson before that, and you know, they were always a powerhouse, and now it seems like, wait a minute, Jim Mora's been across the street at UCLA for a couple years now, and all of a sudden, the tides might be turning in the Pac-12.
Yeah, so, you know, again, I mentioned the word parity before, and, you know, the biggest thing is that the Pac-12 is starting, these teams are starting to even themselves out. And, of course, you have the Washington State Cougars becoming better. You have the Washington Huskies that beat Boise State in week one, and now they're ranked number 20 in the country. So, you know, you have a lot of Pac-12 teams that are getting better, but at the same time, you know, this is USC. So we have a caller calling in from Colorado Springs. We've got Ken on the line from Colorado Springs. Ken, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing tonight?
Good, good. Welcome to On the Double with the Double S Express.
Good to be here. Now, I want to chime in on this topic as far as the USC and Lane Kiffin.
Okay.
You know, Lane Kiffin, he reminds me a lot of, in a sense, of Mack Brown. Outside of Mack Brown, hit it big with Vince Young and having a quarterback there, you know, and winning that one national championship. Great recruiter. Terrible coach. You know, I'm not, you know, yes, Leach is a great coach, you know, and he's an offensive guy, and he proved himself at Texas Tech. I don't know how anybody would go to Lux if you've ever been there. I don't understand. I've been there.
Yes, but, I have been to Lubbock.
Yeah, it's not much there, a bunch of empty oil fields or whatnot. But,
right.
You know, my point is, you know, he is a good coach, but USC should not lose at home to Washington State. You know, they still have, you know, as much as we talk about parity or whatnot, the talent level at USC, they still get the guy that they want out of California. You know, right. don't go to sleep on it thinking that they don't. They get who they want. You know, they might not have the depth as they used to, but they still get that guy, and they should not lose to Washington State at home.
Right. Yeah, and you had mentioned a valid point there, Ken, as far as Mack Brown is concerned. Of course, Mack at Texas, you know, did some great things there. And, you know, but he was a great recruiter. So let me ask you this, Ken. If not Lane Kiffin, then who? Who do you think would do a great job there at USC for the men of Troy?
I think they're going to go back up to Washington and take that guy who's up at Washington, University of Washington right now. I think that'll be their first choice.
Okay, yeah, Steve Sarkisian.
Yes.
Okay, so you believe that Sark will leave Seattle? Yeah. Here's what I'm thinking. I'm giving Lane Kiffin probably 3 weeks. If things don't get better there, I believe that USC has to make a decision. You know, maybe they pull an interim head coach, you know, from within the organization. But I don't see things getting better for USC moving forward. I mean, again, the Pac-12 is definitely a lot stronger than it was over the past couple of years. I'm not too sure about the Sarkisian thing. I'm thinking that he's probably happy where he is, especially with the University of Washington doing some great things so far.
Well, USC has one more year of the sanctions, and that's what Lane Kiffin has been hiding behind, you know, the sanctions itself. So they get their full gamut for scholarships back, I want to say 2014, if I'm not mistaken. So you can't hide behind the sanctions at that time. So a lot of the big-name coaches would shy away and tell you, you know, because, of course, the biggest problem of any job, I think of coaching kind of like a sales job, is controlling expectations, you know. And they set the bar high there, and they should. You know, it's USC. You get the top players in California. You know, it's just like in Texas. Mack Brown has no excuse. You know, he has a top five recruiting class every year. I had a discussion with a friend of mine who lives in Atlanta. He was talking about, you know, some of the recruiting, and he doesn't quite follow recruiting the way I do. Texas, every year, gets who they want. Don't think you're going to just sneak up in their backyard and get somebody. They get who they want.
Right.
You know. They can't get them all, though. That's the thing about it. Can't get them all.
Hey, Ken, Sean Waller here. Thanks so much for calling in. I'm curious to your take on USC possibly, you know, trying to move in on Washington's Steve Sarkisian. I understand it's a larger market, a bigger school with a bigger tradition. But outside of that, what would draw Sarkisian away from the University of Washington when he's the highest paid highest-paid state employee in the state of Washington? Not only that, they just had a $280 million renovation. They've got a facility there now at the University of Washington on Lake Washington that former Husky Mario Bailey says is tops in the world in terms of view, and now with the renovations. Sarkisian's tie to USC, yes, he was an assistant coach there under Pete Carroll, but he didn't go to school there. He's not from L.A., as far as I know. He went to BYU. So I'm not sure what the draw would be, especially when they're apparently going down a spiral that is ending in bad places for Lane Kiffin.
Well, my thoughts on that are, I understand, you know, and I would bring him in, and I would show him my trophy case. That's what I would do, you know.
Yeah.
I understand it's Washington. Yeah, they have improved their money. I mean, excuse me, their facilities, and with the new contract, with the new television contract, and the expansion of the Pac-12, of course, you know, the Pac-12 as a whole is going to get better. And what a lot of people don't understand is that as a conference, as far as the Pac-12, we want, you know, if you support the Pac-12, you want a healthy Washington. You want a healthy Oregon. You want a healthy USC, because it does nothing but bring more money to the conference itself. But I'm sorry, I just have to, let's face it, SC is the crown jewel of the West Coast. You know, they have the deep pockets to do what they need to do to bring in a coach. it's not him. Yeah, I can't really think of somebody off the top of my head. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if they couldn't be able to draw Gruden back.
Wow. Yeah, man, wouldn't that be something if John Gruden went to the college ranks? I mean, I've always felt that he would be able to come back to the game at some point. He misses the game too much, but man, John Gruden, there's a name for you. That would be excellent.
It has to be the right job. And SC, I mean, you know, SC is a top five college gig as far as coaching. You know,
right.
I can't think of five more college schools better. What do we got? Alabama, Notre Dame,
Michigan,
Ohio State.
Yeah,
Texas.
So there's quite a few.
SC's right there.
Right. When you're looking at historic programs, you know, teams that are there year in and year out, yeah, USC is definitely one of them. Hey, Ken, thanks for calling in, man.
Thank you, Connor.
Feel free to call back, man. I love the banter, man. So, you know, wishing USC the best of success, it's not every day you have somebody talking USC from Colorado Springs, but. But, yeah, enjoy having you on, man. So you have a good day.
All right. You take care.
All
Thanks,
right,
Ken.
Bye.
Man, what do you think? There's a name, John Gruden. Do you think, Sean, that, Gruden would go to the college ranks and keep a historic, team going like USC?
You and I know from behind-the-scenes conversations of you working games at O.co and being close to the team and me with my own indirect contacts that if you're smart enough, you can put two and two together, being that I'm in Tri-Cities, Washington. The only place John Gruden is returning to coach, if he ever does, is
yes.
For the Raiders.
Yes, and that would be exciting for, if John Gruden were to ever come back to coach and, going back to Oakland, of course, for me, being an avid Raider fan. But, for USC, though, that would be interesting. I mean, who knows? However much money is being offered, I'm sure that would pique the curiosity of any coach.
Well, of course. I mean, that's why everybody works and does what they do for a living. It's for the paycheck. Granted, people say, oh, I love what I do and that's my dream. And really, you want to work for Waste Management for 40 years? when you were eight years old, is that really what you thought of? It's not. No, it's a fine job. It pays the bills and you have health insurance. But
that's right. And great benefits. So, yeah, for those of you who are in Waste Management who are listening, hey, don't worry. You guys got a great job.
Absolutely. I mean,
and a great union.
For sure. But, it's like.
money definitely talks. And if it's the right avenue, which is USC, who wouldn't want to coach at USC?
You would. I would.
Definitely.
Everybody would. And would it be Gruden? Sure. If the money was right and he had 120% autonomy and could do everything he wanted to do and rename the streets John Gruden Way and John Gruden Coliseum, sure. But college level, I just don't see him going that route. But, I'm no Nostradamus. It could happen, but I'm definitely not leaning that direction. But, wow, it's been an interesting time as Ken called in from Colorado Springs to talk USC football. And I am Sean Wally in Tri-Cities, Washington, Sean Boyd down in Sacramento, California. Together we are the Double S Express, and you're listening to On the Double. We'll be back after this.
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services, platinum service without the platinum price.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express, Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express as we get set to wrap up show number 18. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. And Sean, it's been a great show so far as we are diving into NFL, some college, Pac-12, and let's get back to the league, the NFL.
Yes, and so if you have any questions or you have anything you want to talk about, call into the show, 888-429-5471. Again, 888-429-5471. Callers, welcome. But yeah, the NFL season, week one, Mr. Wally. What's on tap going into week two?
Well, near and dear to your heart and your location at O.co, the Oakland Raiders open up their home schedule and welcome in the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah, so, you know, we were talking a little bit earlier about the Oakland Raiders going into week one playing against the Indianapolis Colts. The big concern was, you know, especially around, if you listen to a lot of the prognosticators, they were explaining that there's no way, shape, or form that Oakland would be able to hang with Andrew Luck, who was runner-up to Rookie of the Year last year, and the Indianapolis Colts. And the Oakland Raiders almost pulled that one out, Sean Wally losing 21-17, of course. But there are some good things that came about. Terrell Pryor, we found out he is an actual bona fide quarterback. And there are some areas of improvement. So for week two, going in, I will be there at O.co as the Jacksonville Jaguars come into town. So that seems to be the cure to what ails you this early in the season. And so let's hope that the Oakland Raiders can come away with a victory.
Yeah, they're primed for it after playing Andrew Luck and the Colts very, very close and almost getting out of Indy with a win that nobody expected, nobody except Dennis Allen and his 53-man squad.
Yeah, the biggest thing that I took out of that is that the Raiders are not looking for moral victories. That was an L, and they understand that. There's a new feel, a new vibe in the locker room, Sean Wally, with this new regime with Dennis Allen and Reggie McKenzie as the GM. There is a huge passion for the game now. And over the past few years, to be honest with you, being in the locker rooms and being on the field and getting a chance to be around the team, I wasn't getting that sentiment. But now it seems like there is a definite change of the guard, and that we should expect a better Oakland Raiders team this year. And not saying that they're going to the playoffs or anything like that, but you will see a better product by the Oakland Raiders.
Yeah, and it's a good thing to see progress from the Raiders. It's something that you started to see when they would get to 500, but then they would blow everything up and get rid of Tom Cable and Hugh Jackson, and now they're trying to get back just to that 8-8, which would be a blessing in disguise, and it's like the sun parting the dark clouds, and it would be fabulous for Raider Nation, yet they're struggling to even get back to that level.
Yeah, you ever have one of those situations where even though things on the outside look good, things just aren't right? And that was the case with the Oakland Raiders. Of course, they had Tom Cable, who's now in Seattle doing some great things as the offensive line coach. You know, but there were just some things that just weren't right, and they brought in Hugh Jackson. And again, there were things that just weren't right. So now you have Reggie McKenzie coming in, cleaning house, getting rid of some of the malcontents on the team, such as the Tommy Kellys, and then you're paying these high salaries such as Richard Seymour and Carson Palmer. Now you have this clean slate that you're starting over again, and the guys are starting to buy into it, and that's exciting. That's what Raider Nation should look forward to. But those are the things that are unseen that the average fan can't detect. But I can tell you firsthand that things are getting better, and again, look for some good things to happen for this franchise in the next couple of years.
Well, if a team's going to get right, and a good way to start and get off the schneid is against the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Definitely.
Who only scored 2 points in their home opener in Jacksonville against the Raiders' foes, the AFC West Kansas City Chiefs. And Gus Bradley, yes, he's a rookie head coach, but he is a phenomenal person, a great family man, and a fabulous football coach. I've had interactions with him at Seahawks headquarters, and I was sad to see him go, but great that he got the opportunity. But man, he will not stand for 2 points out of his team, especially at home.
You're definitely right about that, Sean Wally. It's a blessing in disguise, actually, that I believe that Blaine Gabbert, the starting quarterback for the Jacksonville Jaguars, is injured. And you don't want to wish that on anybody, but I believe that with Chad Henning now being the starting quarterback for this weekend against Oakland, that it gives the Jacksonville Jaguars a better chance to win. And so, you know, Gus Bradley is definitely one of those guys, a stand-up guy coming from the Seahawks organization. And you know that it's just a matter of time before Jacksonville gets themselves back on, you know, back with that winning track. And, of course, they have a small window to do that with Maurice Jones-Drew. But, again, you know, Gus Bradley in his first year as a rookie head coach, things should get better. But speaking of Seattle, Mr. Wally, first week of the season down in Carolina, Seahawks get a win, but it wasn't a pretty one.
You know, Sean, it was a lot like, if you think back to last season, it was a lot like that, a tough, hard-fought game where in the end Seattle does enough right to win the game. And Carolina, of course, as in any game, had their opportunities, but they just couldn't get that stop in the end or not turn the ball over when it mattered. And, you know, the Seattle defense was on par or even better than expected. They held Cam Newton to a all-time low in terms of yardage, completion percentage, and he didn't run for many yards either. He was held to, I want to say, about 130 yards passing, roughly. That's not an exact number, but it was close to that. And that is his lowest output ever. And, you know, Seattle did well against him last year, and they bottled him up very well in the game on Sunday. And really, on offense, Seattle could not run the ball. And they knew that coming in, that it was going to be tough to run the ball. And they said they would, of course, try, and they will never abandon the run because Pete Carroll's teams are always run first. But you know what? Russell Wilson can sling it. And even though he's roughly 5 feet, 11 inches tall, he can throw with the best of them. And after a rough first quarter, he took off and ended with 320 yards passing. And Seattle came away with a 12-7 victory, which with 90% humidity and all of that stuff, flying west to east, which is always rougher than flying east to west, you know, they won a game on the road, week one, which is something they have never done in the Pete Carroll era in Seattle.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, one of the stats that comes out all the time is that if you want to go to the playoffs in you know, you must win week one. You know, I believe it's 80% or somewhere between 75 to 80% of the teams that win in week one wind up going to the playoffs. So it was definitely important for Seattle just to get the victory, and they did just that. You had mentioned Russell Wilson throwing for over 300 yards, you know, 320 yards. It sounds like they were moving the ball up and down the field, but just couldn't quite get it into the end zone. It took a 40-yard pass, though, I believe, from Russell Wilson to Jermaine Kearse late in the game. And, I mean, this kid, gosh, you talk about somebody trying to earn a huge salary, a huge payout. Jermaine Kearse is definitely doing his diligence as a receiver and a special teamer for the Seattle Seahawks.
You know, Sean, we talked about Steve Sarkisian earlier in the broadcast. Of course, as Ken in Colorado Springs called in and thought that maybe he would be the next USC Trojan head coach. And that's been rumored in the past year, and Sarkisian has sternly shot it down. And Sarkisian, of course, coached Jermaine Kearse at the University of Washington, and Kearse went undrafted. He was a great receiver, as you know, at Lakes High School in Steilacoom, Washington, and went on to good things at the University of Washington, but he did have a few cases of the drops where he wouldn't hang on to passes. And I believe that is the reason he went undrafted. And Pete Carroll, John Schneider, signed him up as an undrafted free agent. And last year, of course, first-year jitters, not only that, but the learning curve of the NFL. And it's like they say, the second year, you're so much further ahead of your first year in the league because you understand more, you know what to expect, you know the playbook. You don't have to think so much. You can just go out and do. And he is taking full advantage of every opportunity on special teams, as a receiver. And he did just that and went out and completely took a beautifully thrown spiral from Russell Wilson about 43 yards in the air, took it away from two defenders, and was able to turn his body in the air away from the defenders to save the football, catch it, land on the ground in the end zone, touchdown Seahawks, basically game over.
Yeah, and so, you know, that's week one, you know, and having the 12-7 victory, again, that's a feather in the cap for Seattle. Now we move on to bigger fish to fry in week number two. You have the San Francisco 49ers coming into town, Sean Wally. And it looks, I believe that this is a game that's been circled not just by the coaches, but by the players and fans all around, not just from Northern California and the state of Washington, but all around the country. All eyes will be on the Pacific Northwest for this Sunday night game.
Absolutely. A huge Sunday night football game, of course, on NBC, as you and I both work for the network when they come to our respective towns. And, you know, we know people on the crew that travel across the country with them. And, you know, it brings the whole circus to town. All eyes are watching because it's the only game going, kind of like Monday night football, Thursday night football. There's no other football you can turn to. And Al Michaels, Chris Collinsworth, Bob Costas, the entire crew comes to town, and it feels like a playoff game, a playoff atmosphere, and it's just amped up that much more because Jim Harbaugh and Colin Kaepernick and the hated San Francisco 49ers look to invade Seattle.
Man, you know, and you mentioned going up there to CenturyLink Field in the 12th fan. You know, I personally believe that the 12th fan is second to the black hole in the Raider Nation, but that's an entirely different story, and we'll talk about that later. But going up to CenturyLink Field where the crowd noise is intense and incredible, I know that last year the San Francisco 49ers, the 12th man. I know the San Francisco 49ers went up in the second game last year to Seattle and got a rude awakening. Do you expect that to happen again this Sunday, this early in the season?
Here's what I can tell you. It's going to be much different than Seattle's game yesterday in Carolina. If only for the fact that it's in Seattle, and you've got the aforementioned 12th man packing CenturyLink Field with standing room only seats. Or not even seats. You're standing. You're paying to stand on concrete. And you definitely come off the last time San Francisco was in Seattle, was also on Sunday Night Football in December. I was there on the field working for NBC in the rain, getting soaked like everybody else. And it was a total domination, annihilation of Kaepernick and the 49ers. Now, the question is, who learns the most from that last contest? And who makes the most adjustments here in 2013? Of course, we saw yesterday in San Francisco, Kaepernick didn't run as much. He didn't have the rollouts, the bootlegs. He was a pocket passer. He can do that against Seattle, great. But guess what? Seattle's got arguably the best secondary in the NFL. Green Bay, not even close. Can Seattle cover Anquan Boldin? A lot better than Green Bay did. Guarantee it. When you put, hopefully, Brandon Browner, who missed week one with an injury, Richard Sherman, arguably the best cornerback in all of football, just ask him, he'll tell you. And then the two best safeties in the league, hands down, Earl Thomas and Bam Bam Cam Chancellor. It's not even close compared to what Kaepernick had to face yesterday at home against Green Bay.
Yeah, you know, being at that game yesterday in San Francisco, and I had mentioned earlier, you know, both teams, Green Bay and San Francisco, seemed to be in midseason form. And, you know, I have to give the nod to the Seattle Seahawks as far as the secondary are concerned. You're right with Chancellor and Sherman on the corners. Those guys are big. They're physical. They get up and down. They get in your face. You know, at the same time, you know, with Green Bay, that's not a slouch defense either. And, you know, I credit more the quarterbacks in this game yesterday than I do the lack thereof of the defense. My biggest concern, actually the concern that should be for Seattle fans and San Francisco fans is even though San Francisco lost that second game, San Francisco won the first game last year in 2012. Now, the team that wins the first game out of the two, which was San Francisco last year, wound up winning the NFC West. So whether you're home or away, it is important, whether you're San Francisco or Seattle, to get that first game out of the two. If you get the first game out of the two, you right the ship. San Francisco wound up ending the season, even with a tie, they wound up winning the division 11-4-1 to Seattle's 11-5. Now, it is important for Seattle, as you're saying, to get physical on defense, but more importantly, find a way to get that running game going. Marshawn Lynch has to get it going somehow. Russell Wilson might have to use his feet a little bit just to keep the offense going. But I can tell you this, that again, the whole country is watching, and it should be a great ball game for this early in the season for the NFL. And I'm predicting a close one. I can't even tell you who's going to come out with this, but I can tell you this. Whoever wins this game this Sunday in week two, on Sunday night, on NBC, will definitely win the NFC West.
That's a bold prediction by Sean Boyd, one half of the Double S Express, claiming that the winner of Sunday Night Football on NBC Week 2, San Francisco 49ers visiting the Seattle Seahawks at CenturyLink Field. The winner will win the NFC West. That is a definite good omen for whoever does win that game, be it Seattle or San Francisco. Whatever team wins Sunday night will have a one-game lead. That is a fact.
And that's pretty much all it will need because, you know, for the rest of the season, these guys are going to, you know, they're pretty much going to, they have a chance to win out. I mean, both teams are that good. And so, you know, whoever gets this one, just like last year, you know, gets the chance to, you know, hold serve, if you will. So, you know, I'm looking forward to it. You know, NFC West is definitely on the rise. A great game yesterday in the NFC West with St. Louis and Arizona, so you have those two teams that are trying to get themselves back to, you know, some type of existence. And so, you know, it should be a great year in the NFC.
You know, that's one of the other things that, unfortunately, most of the country didn't see unless they happened to have NFL Sunday ticket because it was on Fox, just like the Green Bay-San Francisco game that you worked in San Francisco for Fox, is that the Arizona Cardinals and the St. Louis Rams went toe-to-toe, and it wasn't two bad teams, you know, doing enough to stay even with each other. These are two teams doing the right things, being rebuilt the proper way. The St. Louis Rams have the youngest roster in the NFL. The Seattle Seahawks used to be the youngest roster in the NFL, and look at how they are projecting onward and upward and projected to do great things in 2013. Seattle is right now the fourth youngest team in the NFL. And in St. Louis, it was a great game by former Raiders quarterback Carson Palmer, hitting Larry Fitzgerald for not one but two touchdowns in one game, which I don't know how Fitzgerald maintained his composure, because he had only four touchdowns all of last season.
Yeah, you know, and you mentioned Carson Palmer. You know, he needs a team like the Arizona Cardinals, a team that's going to give him the attention that he wasn't given in Oakland. And what I mean by that is you know, surrounding him with, you know, a strong offensive line. I know that the Cardinals went to great lengths to drafting offensive linemen. They've had a couple of nicks and dinks, some injuries in the preseason, but I think they'll be at full strength by week three. You know, and having some great receivers to pass to. And, of course, in Fitzgerald, you know, yesterday, Carson Palmer threw for 327 yards. And then on the other end, you know, Sam Bradford threw for 299, both, you know, having great games, excellent games, two touchdowns and an interception for each quarterback, respectively. Game was 27-24 in favor of St. Louis, but it was a, you know, it was a hard-fought game by both teams. Both teams wanted to come out and make a statement, and I believe that each team did. So when they go out and play outside of their conference, you know, look out.
Absolutely. It's going to be, as advertised, possibly the toughest division in the NFL, that being the NFC West in 2013.
Yes, yeah, so you know, so mark it down. NFC West is the team, or is the division to look out for in the NFL, especially in the NFC. And so, you know, it starts this Sunday again with San Francisco against Seattle, and you know, all eyes will be glued, including myself, and trying to get back from Oakland, hopefully a victory over the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah, the NFL week one just about winding up, as we have two Monday night games here tonight. And do you have an update on the game going on in San Diego right now, Sean Boyd?
Yeah, about 3 minutes left to go in the first quarter. We've got the game is all knotted up. Houston 7, San Diego 7. San Diego drawing first blood early in the game. And so, you know, I'm sorry, San Diego just scored at the end of the first quarter. And so, yeah, it's 14-7. So I don't have who just made the touchdowns just yet, but looks like I mentioned earlier, I mean, Phillip Rivers, you know, this guy, if you give him a chance, he'll keep you in the ballgame.
For a few minutes. Give it time. He'll throw the wrong route. He'll throw to the wrong team, and Houston will run away with the game. Good night, Phillip Rivers. I tell you, I'm not going to get on my Phillip Rivers soapbox, because we need to say a very huge congratulations to GP number 20, Gary Payton, the greatest guard to ever play in Seattle and one of the best defensive guards in all of NBA history, making the 2013 class of Basketball Hall of Fame.
Man, how could we almost go through a show here without talking about Gary Payton? GP, are you with me? Payton. I mean, man, this guy did some great things for you know, our beloved Seattle Supersonics from 1990 to 2003. Then going on and having a quick stint with the Milwaukee Bucks, the Los Angeles Lakers, you know, had a quick stop with the Boston Celtics, and then winding up in Miami to where he got his first NBA championship. I wish that, you know, Seattle Supersonics would have been able to do that in 1996. But, of course, we all know his heirness, Michael Jordan, and his Chicago Bulls stood in the way. But a great, great career by Gary Payton. And congratulations on going into the Basketball Hall of Fame.
Absolutely. One of the greatest defenders, probably the best trash talker out there.
Yeah. You know, a lot of the times, you know, people would say, hey, man, who's the biggest trash talker in the NBA? Gary Payton's name always came up along with Michael Jordan's. And, you know, all that just means is that these guys are competitive and they had a zeal to win. And, you know, it was just fun to watch. You know, Gary Payton, I remember in the younger days when he and Sean Kemp would come down the court and, you know, Gary lays up the alley-oop and Kemp slams it down with authority, as Kevin Calabro, KC, would say. And those were good times, Sean Wally, you know, getting a chance to you know, to watch those guys play. But, again, congratulations to Gary Payton from down in this neck of the woods, Oakland, California, on getting into the Basketball Hall of Fame.
Absolutely. And, you know, we got to mention that his younger brother, Brandon Payton, also had decent basketball skills. And we got the opportunity to not only call games he played in the International Basketball League back in the day when we were with the Tacoma Thunder, but also had the chance to interview Brandon Payton a time or two after games, on post games, when he would, you know, help his Portland Chinook to the victory. And yeah, he just learned great things from Gary and tried to instill that in his game and also things throughout his life. And Gary's done good things in the community and in Seattle and also in Oakland.
Yeah, you know, of course, Gary coming from Oakland, California, Skyline High School, and then going on to Oregon State. Gary just comes from a long lineage of guards that come out of Oakland, California. Of course, there's, you know, there's Jason Kidd, you know, Brian Shaw, just to name a couple of the point guards that come out of the Oakland area. Of course, you have Damian Lillard, the latest that comes out of Oakland, and he is the NBA Rookie of the Year. And so, you know, these guys that have come out of the area, Gary Payton is definitely one of the pioneers that has allowed these guards to come out and become successful.
Has to be just a euphoric feeling and a euphoric weekend for Gary Payton and his family.
Yeah, you know, and you know, again, that is, it's not easy to, in anything, to become the best, you know, in what you do. And, of course, when you get elected into the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame, that says that you have a strong body of work. And, you know, you got to give it up for the glove, you know, when it comes to the way he was as a leader, not just on the court, but off the court, as you had mentioned, doing things in the community. And, you know, a job well done.
Sean Boyd, show number 18, pretty much in the books. NFL, college football dominate our show and most of sports these days. Football is the way to go. And now we look forward to week two in the NFL.
Yeah, so, yeah, again, you know, we had some callers calling in today. And if you, you know, if you ever want to call into the show, again, that number is 888-429-5471. You can go on our website at double-s-express, that's spelled XPRESS.com. You can see some of the archives, some of our latest shows. If you want to write us in, or send us an email, you can send it to Sean, SHAWN, at double-s-express.com, or to the other Sean, which is me, Sean, SEAN, at double-s-express.com. Show number 18 in the books, Mr. Wally, and another great one.
Absolutely. Thank you so much to Alex for calling in tonight, as well as Ken in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Thanks so much for your time and taking the time to call on the Double with the Double S Express as we wrap up show number 18. Lots of football going on. In fact, a game still in play as the Houston Texans take on the San Diego Chargers. Do we have a final score update, Sean Boyd?
Well, 9 minutes left in the first half. San Diego 13, Houston 7. And so, you know, that is the score that we have thus far. And I'm sorry, 14-7 because of the extra point that was added. I believe Matt Schaub has a touchdown pass for the Houston Texans. And Phillip Rivers throws two touchdowns as he is 6 of 8 for 68 yards. And, you know, two touchdowns. And so, though, you know, I mean, San Diego's rolling right along. Eddie Royal with a touchdown. Ryan Matthews with a touchdown coming out of the backfield. So San Diego's here to play.
Looking ahead to week number two in the NFL, any final words of wisdom or predictions from Sean Boyd?
Man, predictions. It's too early in the season for those. You know, for me, again, as a Raiders fan, I'm just hoping that the Oakland Raiders can get that victory. If I were to make a prediction, if you're asking me to make a prediction on the Seattle-San Francisco game, man, that one, I would say, as in election years, it is too close to call.
So are you saying there might be some hanging chads on Sunday night in Seattle?
There might be if you're looking at MVPs or players of the year, definitely.
Just please tell me we're not going to have Bill Levy officiating in Seattle.
Oh, man, wouldn't that be something if that crew wound up in Seattle? But, I don't think the NFL is going to do that, you know, for that game or do that to you guys like that.
I'm hoping for Mike Carey. Definitely. I think he's one of the best in the league. And, man, you know, it'd be great if it was officiated properly. Nobody even knew who they were, because that's when the officiating crew does a good job.
Hey, man, hey, come on. Officiating, that's, you know, I think if these teams go out and take care of business, you know, the right outcome will appear. I mean, I know Seattle doesn't shy away from controversial calls. So Green Bay to name one. So I think the right crew will be there to call the game for you.
Well, that would be good. That would be good because, you know, like Raider Nation knows with the Tuck rule, the wrong call can hurt.
Man, that's a whole nother show.
Hey, you were trying to get Seattle on, and I had to bring it in.
Man, there's a whole bunch of plays I could bring up. But, again, that's a whole nother show.
For Sean Boyd in Sacramento, California, and definitely bleeding Raider Nation, I am Sean Wally in Tri-Cities, Washington, representing for the 12th man as the Seahawks look to tackle the San Francisco 49ers Sunday Night Football next week. And for Raider Nation, Oakland, their home opener, they welcome in the Jacksonville Jaguars. You've been listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. We'll look forward to your calls and hearing from you in the next week. We'll talk to you next Monday right here on the Double with the Double S Express.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for some more great sports talk and big-time guests on the Double with the Double S Express.